Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every weekday here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is the examined life. Socrates said the unexamined life is not worth living. All three of my guests have examined aspects of their lives, and they're here to tell us about it. My first guest examines our future lives by talking to thought leaders in science, technology, nanotechnology, and philosophy. He comes away from these discussions with an optimistic point of view, and he writes about it in his latest book titled The Optimist's Tour of the Future. My second guest has led an extraordinary life. He examines his life and his experiences in his memoir, My Odyssey. My third guest is a shaman in training with Carlos Castaneda. He reflects on his experience with Castaneda and muses over philosophy in his latest book, The Art of Navigation. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Mark Stevenson's early career, saw him mixing two jobs, one as an expert in prime number cryptology and the other fronting a pop band, enjoying a brief notoriety in Japan, France, and, much to his surprise, Chile. The videos still embarrass him to this day. After a brief stint trying to do what his parents would call a proper job, he quit, having decided that communications and learning was really what interested him. Mark now combines his two careers, one as a successful writer-comedian, writing for TV, radio, and print, and the other as a director of cultural learning agency Flow Associates and the science of communications agency ReAgency. In these roles, he regularly is called upon to help organizations of all sizes think about their future. A new mobile project, re-engendering conversation and stimulating learning and direct action with audiences of 30 million users, The Age of Smart, is coming in mid-2011. Mark is a fellow at the Royal Society for the Encouragement of the Arts, Manufacturers, and Commerce. Welcome to the show, Mark. How are you today?
I'm all right. Thank you for having me on the show, Billy. It's great to be on a show called The Examined Life.
There you go. That's the theme for today's show, and I love having thought leaders like yourself. I enjoy books about the future and what's going to come next. And that's really what drew me to your book in the first place, Mark. The future never plays out, however, the way we think it's going to do.
Yeah,
for example, where are the flying cars?
Yeah.
You know? I wanted flying cars. I wanted jetpacks or something like that that was going to help us. Now,
do you want the robot from the Jetsons as well?
I wouldn't mind the robot. We're closer to that than you might think. But
well, yeah, indeed. But I think when people predict the future, it says a lot more about the time that the prediction was made than what actually happens in the future. If you look at the history of futurology, it's actually just the history of history.
Interesting point of view. Now, why did you decide to tackle the subject of what's coming next?
Well, my whole life is based around trying to communicate difficult things in easy and accessible ways. And I was thinking that, you know, there is no one-stop book that helps the ordinary man in the street get a handle on things like, you know, nanotechnology, biotechnology, what's happening with the climate, what's happening with the internet, how all these things intertwine. So I wanted to write kind of a quick-witted tour of the scientific horizon that would allow people to sort of have a think about these things. Because I do think that what's happening in genetics and biotech and infotech and nanotech and all these kind of things, they're going to affect the way we live. That's absolutely true. I mean, I try not to make too many predictions in the book. What I'm saying, look, there's some trends here. We need to discuss these. There are some ethical issues that come with these. We really need to think carefully about how we direct our future.
Well, and the way in which you went about writing the book is what fascinated me as well, Mark. You know, you came up with the idea to go out and question thought leaders in their specific field to help paint a picture of these possible futures.
Yeah.
And that's what fascinated. Now, you didn't write the book to say, here's the one path to the future, because you really can't do that. You explore a bunch of different ideas and technologies, and you don't really have any predisposed idea of which one is going to be right. How'd you come up with the idea of going out to thought leaders and taking this direction about writing the book?
Well, I'm just an insatiably curious kind of guy. You know, give me a chance to ask a question, I'll ask 10. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, if I'm going to ask these questions about these big subjects, I need to go and talk to the best people. So I did end up getting interviews with a whole bunch of, like, you know, Nobel Prize level kind of scientists and philosophers and business leaders and so on and so forth. And I was lucky. A lot of them don't often give interviews, but I think maybe having been a comedian, I was able to charm them a little with a few jokes. So I got through the door with a bunch of people that sometimes don't give interviews, and I just followed my nose, really. I started off looking at transhumanism, the whole idea that we might be able to transcend our biology, and that was because it's such a car crash of ethics and science and technology. And from there I kind of tried to unravel it. And the whole point of the book was not to go in with an agenda, but to go in just with a questing disposition. And I hope that makes it easy to read, because you come on this journey with me. So one of my reviewers said, this is like a cross between Isaac Asimov and Bill Bryson. And that's exactly what I wanted to do. You know, you're getting to learn about all these crazy technologies and the people that are doing interesting thought-leading stuff, but you're also kind of with me going like, oh, wow, God, I didn't know that. And what does that mean? And where does that lead? And what question does that raise? And then by the end of it, I'm trying to pull it all together. So the last part of the book is basically a personal reboot, where I suddenly go, okay, I'm not going to predict the future, but I am going to try to come with a way of approaching it.
All right. I love the methodology. We're talking to Mark Stevenson, everybody, about his latest book, An Optimist's Tour of the Future. And Mark, you did interview very famous people. I'm just going to name drop here just a little bit. George Church, who really started the Human Genome Project.
Yep.
K. Eric Drexler in nanotechnology is probably one of the gurus there. Yep. Mohamed Nasheed, who is the president of the Maldives. If you had to pick one of the people who impressed you the most, who would it be and why did they impress you?
Oh, that's such a mean question.
I am a mean guy.
Because they were all incredibly impressive. In fact, I say towards the end of the book that what impressed me most was not the technologies, but the people, and the way that they all were just not waiting for permission to get on and do the right thing and make the world better. But if I really had to pick one,
mm-hmm.
And I hope none of the others are listening, it would be Mohamed Nasheed, who is the president of the Maldives. And the reason I went to see him was because, first, the Maldives are very worried about climate change, and there's not a single island in their nation that is more than 6 feet above sea level. So they're kind of a microcosm of that whole problem. But also they're turning the country carbon neutral. So I wanted to go and see what they were doing and talk about those technologies. But also I wanted to go and see Mohamed Nasheed in particular, because 18 months before I saw him, he was in jail as a political prisoner under the former dictatorial regime. I mean, the stories of his confinement are horrific. You know, they put glass in his food, laxatives in his food. They put him in a cell that was designed to heat up in the baking sunshine. They put him in solitary confinement. He missed the birth of his two daughters. He was beaten to the brink of death twice, or assassination. I mean, you know, it's your standard horrific story of a brutal dictatorial regime. And yet somehow he managed to form a democracy movement and become the first democratically elected president of his nation. So the reason I wanted to see him was because when you talk about technology, you get a lot of techno-optimists going, well, you know, this technology is going to solve this problem, that problem. It's all going to be beautiful, and we'll all be wearing, you know, silver suits and called Lomax 7 and live in perfect harmony. And I wanted to go and see a guy who had been in a really difficult place and had got himself into a better place. Because one of the things you think about, when if you think about the dialogue of the future we've got at the moment, we're being told it's going to be terrible. And I wanted to find somebody who could help me understand how it is to, you know, have this very fearful picture staring you in the face and then still come out from under it and make something brilliant happen. So I would say he was the most inspirational character.
All right. Now let's talk about the view of the future, because you're either going to be an optimist or a pessimist about the future. And you made the comment that most people view negatively the future. It's things are going to be terrible. We're going to have global warming. The Maldives are going to disappear because the ocean's levels are going to rise and wipe out the entire country. We're going to have icebergs melting and all sorts of problems, probably an earthquake here in California. We're going to fall in the ocean. But the reality is, you're an optimist. Coming out of the end of this book, you are optimistic about our future. And I think most people who embrace science tend to be more optimistic as well. So give me an overview, Mark, if you will. What made you optimistic after all of these interviews? What made you optimistic about our future?
Well, I mean, the thing is, I have to say that I'm not intrinsically optimistic.
You're not.
No, I started off the book simply as a world tour of the future. But by the time I'd come back, I found all these technologies that could do amazing things. And what I realized was that somehow along the line, the pessimists had just taken half the game off the table. So what I'm saying, I think, is the future could be terrible. You know, we've got plenty of examples of ways we can do terrible things to our planet and ourselves. But it could also be a renaissance. What I was finding was that, you know, that we weren't talking about the possibility it could be good anymore. So I suppose what I'm trying to mix is an optimism of aspiration, an optimism of the will, and a pessimism of the intellect. I mean, I quite like hanging around with pessimists because they keep you sharp, you know. You say, I want to head off for now. I want to make this world better. And then they'll go, well, what about that? And what about that? And what about that? And you're going, okay, well, I'm going to meet these challenges. What I can't stand is wishful thinkers, people who kind of have this cocktail of denial and hope, and which is called apathy, you know, and just makes you do nothing. So I'm an optimist by disposition. Like, I want to, I really believe we should try and make things better, because I do know if you don't try and make things better, if you just assume things are going to be rubbish, then guess what, they are. If you go into a job interview and you don't think you're going to get the job, guess what,
you're not
going to get the job. If we head to the future thinking it's going to be rubbish, guess what? So it could be, but I want to put some of those good options back on the table. And there were so many things in this book that I didn't set out to find, but I just couldn't help stumbling across.
All right. We're talking to Mark Stevenson, everybody. And Mark, I loved your book and the different scenarios that you presented in the book. I want to drill down on one of them, because in the book you write that sometimes we can't even see a problem because it's either too big or it's too familiar. And that's the case with the number one cause of death worldwide. In fact, this cause of death is the reason for more than two-thirds of the deaths annually come from this cause. And surprising to me when I read this, that cause is aging. So what did your research teach you about reversing or significantly slowing down aging?
Well, there is now quite a credible argument that you can defeat death. I mean, we haven't got there yet, and the people who say it are challenged, and as they should be. But if you look at what's happening with stem cell research, for instance, so let's go to North Carolina. There's the Wake Forest Institute of Regenerative Medicine, and they are growing 22 types of human tissue in a laboratory. Let's talk about Caitlin McNamara. She's a young lady who was born with a diseased bladder. They took a stem cell out of that diseased bladder, some stem cells. They regrew her an entire new bladder on a scaffold in the laboratory, and they implanted the replacement back into it. It is like a replacement body part. You've got this whole idea of genomic medicine, whereby you'll be able to avoid getting ill because you'll be able to change your lifestyle and advance the things that are going to make you ill. And this is all tied up with something called the Personal Genome Project that's coming out of Harvard. So it is certainly the case that, and if you look at the trends through history, we are living longer and we're living healthier worldwide. If you go back just 100 years, the lowest life expectancy, average life expectancy of any nation was 22 years old. That was Bangladesh. Now, the lowest life expectancy of any nation on the planet is 44. It's double. And that's one of the lowest, and that's Afghanistan. So, you know, we're on this trend already. You know, I'm 40 next birthday. You only have to go back 200 years. I'd have been an old man.
That's true. We're talking to Mark Stevenson, an old man, but he's an optimist about the future, which I like very much. And Mark, I want to ask you or challenge you a little bit on this, too, and ask you, to what extent is this increased interest in prolonging life the result of the baby boom generation rapidly approaching the end of their lives? Because we're the largest, wealthiest generation that's ever been in human history, and we've got money. We're going to throw money at trying to live a little bit longer, aren't we?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. There's a great algorithm, a great equation, which says you can predict a futurist's ability to, or when he says that living forever will become a reality, and it's usually about the time he hits 70. So, you know, if he's 50, he'll predict that it'll happen in 20 years' time. You know, he's 40, he'll predict it'll happen in 30 years' time. I mean, the thing is, we are living healthier, we are living longer, medicine isn't abating. There's numerous examples of that in the book. It does ask us to rethink, you know, what it means to retire. What does it mean to be, you know, still fit as a fiddle at 75? You know, we've got to rethink what it is to be human.
Well, that's a very good point. Mark, I'm going to change gears on you. Let's talk about something that's on everybody's mind as well. A lot's been written about global warming. You went to the Maldives to kind of explore that as well.
Yep.
In my lifetime, just to tell you how old I am, we've gone from the coming of the second ice age, which was predicted in the 1970s, to where we are today with global warming.
Yep.
To me, it's all very confusing. You studied climatology. Where is the study of climatology leading us today?
Well, I just wanted to pick up on that first point, which is about, I think a reason a lot of people are skeptical is because we're kind of fed up of hearing about the next apocalypse. I mean, you know, you can make a list of them, you know, the SARS, the Y2K bug, you know, the Ice Age, global warming. And the thing is that climate science is not an exact science, you know. The climate system is inherently unpredictable. I mean, you know, anybody who's trying to do a weather forecast knows that. On balance, I looked at it and I came to the conclusion that the science was pretty good. That there are a few areas where we're not quite sure what's happening here and there, but overall there is kind of this massive scientific consensus. And the conclusion I came to was like, I play poker, mm-hmm. and I'm not a very good poker player, okay, because I'm always optimistic about what's still in the deck. So if I've got a couple of hearts in my hand, I'll wait for three more hearts to come in, I think, because I'll get a flush. My mate Brian, he always takes my money because he bets low when he folds when his cards are bad, and he bets high when his cards are good. And I'm thinking with climate change, like if we're wrong about climate change, okay, when we still decide to attack the problem, so we say it's not actually happening, but we still try and use these new technologies, all it means is we move over to greener, more sustainable technologies quicker. If we're right about climate change and we do nothing, then by some estimates, 5 billion of us die, you know, and I'm just not willing to bet, you know, 5 million of my fellow human beings on a skeptical position.
All right. That's a very good point. Mark, we just only have a minute or so left, but what do you want readers to take away from reading An Optimist Tour of the Future?
Well, I tell you what readers have been taking away because they've been emailing me. They've just been saying, you know what, I'm feeling that there's an option back on the table here, and it's made me more optimistic about the future and that I've got a part to play in making it better. You know, you've just got to realize that the pessimists love to own a debate. They don't have to anymore. And all I'm doing is saying, you know, the future may not be better, but it could be. And let's have the optimism of our aspiration and use all our best critical thinking skills to examine our lives, to kind of turn, you know, to tie in with the theme of your show and make sure we're all in that game. I think everybody of good conscience needs to be fighting for an optimistic future.
That's great. We've been talking to Mark Stevenson, author of the book, An Optimist Tour of the Future. One curious man sets out to answer what's next. Mark, you've just given us a torrent of information. It's like trying to drink from a fire hose. If people want to learn more about you, learn more about your book, where would you direct them to go on the internet?
The best place to go is probably my website, which is just www.anoptimisttouroftheFuture.com. And the good thing about that is there's pictures there from the book, so you know there's various places I go, and you can actually see what I discovered there. And there's videos and information. You can contact me if you've got any questions. I reply to everybody, so anybody can go there.
Oh, that's wonderful, and we all love pictures. Mark, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it a great deal.
Oh, thanks so much. Take care.